patient stuff. That is.
It's like, oh, it's a whole.
Lord grant me to put it together.
Just for teams, okay.
All right. So I guess we can head into the work session discussion regarding election year policies. So I don't know who is going to lead that particular.
Okay.
City Manager Strobel.
Is that one still on? There's just some feedback I was hearing.
Oh, mine is off.
Oh, yours is off, okay. All right, good evening, Mayor, members of council, Jay Strobel, City Manager, also joined by Cindy Divinish, Brad Tolberg, and also as part of this conversation, Devin Montero and City Attorney Thompson is likely to jump in as well. So just a little bit of background, as you all know, we are entering 2026 is an election year, and historically there have been situations where staff really could have benefited from some clarity from City Council with regard to policies around things like political tabling at city-sponsored events, some timing of certain city-sponsored events, employee pictures within campaign literature, and then other sort of ancillary topics like that. So we really wanted to at least talk about those three topics. I would suggest talking about the photographs first, talking about the tabling at city-sponsored events, to talk about some pros and cons in that, and then lastly to talk about sort of timing of city events. This has been a topic that we've had some conversation with previous councils about, but there's been some additional issues that have arisen that we think would benefit from additional clarity from the City Council. So with that, hey Devin, can you send Dr. Smith the link so she can, sorry, let me just text her back. Okay, so one of the things as part of the process, and City Clerk Montero can correct me on this, and everything that he sends out, but when candidates come to pick up packets, typically he provides some literature to those candidates in terms of kind of different state laws that people need to abide by, our local ordinances relative to where people can put signs, not put signs, and then I think we've begun a practice of encouraging candidates to try to avoid not using pictures of city staff where possible, and put city staff in sort of a hard position because it can suggest somewhat of an endorsement of certain candidates. And this is particularly an issue for our police and fire staff because, our police and fire are very strongly supported in the community, and, elected officials sort of like to support our police and fire, and it's sort of natural. We also know that there's a First Amendment right that, people, there's some, in terms of restricting that, if we're all at a public space and there's pictures taken, let's say that the groundbreaking coming up at the Zanewood, or the grand opening for the Zanewood Youth Center here in a couple weeks, and there's pictures taken, and staff's there, elected officials, potential candidates are there, and some of those pictures end up in campaign literature, it could just sort of put staff inadvertently in a challenging situation. So to my understanding, we can't prohibit any candidate from including those pictures, again, because if we're in public spaces and getting pictures taken. So what we have taken to do is to encourage through our local elections is for the City Clerk Montero to encourage candidates where possible to just try to do that as a courtesy to city staff. And in most cases, when it happens and people are made aware of, they're great in terms of taking things off of the website. Obviously, it's harder if it's in printed materials, but it does become an issue. We can't really prohibit it when it comes to state races, but just sort of an awareness of that too. And then the other thing that we will likely do is send out a note to city staff if they, you know, want to remove themselves from city staff pictures or pictures with political candidates, that they can do that on their own free will. But we would ask all candidates to be respectful, and we would do a reminder as part of the information that Devin sends. Again, so I don't think, unless City Attorney Thompson says that there could actually be a policy around this, I don't think that there can be, both on the employee side and on the candidate side. But just, this is more of an awareness or any ideas or feedback that the City Council might have. I would ask City Clerk Montero if there's anything else that you would say with regard to this one. I know you are the one who was the liaison to most candidates.
Mayor Hudson and Councilmember, I think you covered most of it, Jay.
Okay.
And again, when the candidates start picking up their candidate packets, it's really important to have that information. And I go with them with it's in a packet, cover all that information and details. So it'll be helpful if we can have some kind of answer for them for this conversation.
Attorney Thompson, did you have anything to add? I know one of your attorneys weighed in on a note.
Just two things. There's two perspectives on this. Is what sort of advice give the candidates or tools to make sure they can use it on the more as well, the candidates. But employees do have a right not to have their picture taken, with the candidate if they choose to do that. So, and number two, just from a candidate's perspective, there are potential campaign violation issues if they hold out a picture and falsely portray someone as supporting their campaign when they're not. So that's not handled at the city level, that's handled at the state level, and complaint nothing for that. So it's good for candidates to know those rules too. We can't give them that advice, but at least we can cue them to make sure they are aware of that type of situation.
As a dream.
Thank you. Would take advantage of big chance. I just want to share that if the resident been discussed about some thing at River 3, they are not sure if it's a violation or not. So the information that if you are not sure about that, you can go online and searching federal law, the Hatch Act, the state law, use the public resource for campaigns, so that the for clarity. And one more thing, I just want to share that in the past, I have seen that the candidate that use their volunteers, majority volunteers, they don't know about this rule, and so they put the sign onto the people property without asking their permission, and that is a violation. So, beware if you use the volunteer, you should tell them not to do that. And the property owners, the city respect your owner right, property owner right. So, in that case, you can call the city to report. Because anyone that put the sign onto your property, they need your permission.
Thank you. I do wonder, and regarding that particular point of the lawn signs, because there have been some serial offenders on that. there's a way to communicate that out through our park pages. Maybe we can get that out to let people know, hey, if a random lawn sign appears on your lawn and you didn't ask for it, and your spouse didn't ask for it, it doesn't need to be there. And who they can reach out to the city to pick it up or whatever. I do think that that's important because there are some serial offenders when it comes to that piece, and then maybe we can bring it up as we get closer to campaign season about seeing that piece as well. Did anybody have any comments before I say anything? Councilmember Klausky.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. Jay, in our conversations today, there was a couple other questions around allowing people to rent tables at events. Did you talk about that?
Mayor Winston, Councilmember Klausky, members of council. I was going to take each item kind of one by one. The first one was around the photography piece.
Okay.
Then we'll dive into the tabling piece, and then we'll dive into the timing of sort of city-sponsored events, if that's okay. Happy to jump into tabling if people want to get into that topic.
Question, it's mostly related to the photography, but more in general. So I'm thinking about the role of a staff member who's also a resident and how that can muddy the, because we definitely want our staff to be politically aware, politically active, however they want to be. But also some of our staff are very recognizable as city staff. So is, I'm not even sure exactly what question I'm asking, but are there sort of any guidance for folks that are, I'm thinking especially folks in the city's division who are out all the time, but are also, I mean, kind of the reason they love doing community engagement work is they're also engaged in other things. And we don't want to discourage that, but also kind of protect the separation of their official and their unofficial role. And I guess I'm mostly asking how the city can help staff balance those two things without it kind of taking on a punitive feeling. Because I know some folks have expressed concern about that.
Yeah, this question has come up, and it reminded me today to look at our employee handbook in terms of what's allowable and for political activity or not. Currently, there's essentially a prohibition on staff doing any political activity, sort of on staff time, using staff equipment, using any apparel or other uniform that might identify them for as a Brooklyn Park employee. What I don't know, and maybe Attorney Thompson could clarify, if there is ability of there being employee rules that prohibit employees from being involved in any capacity of local election activities. I can understand it kind of for other candidates, but there, to your point, Councilmember Erickson, I think that it does become, you know, challenging when staff are involved as both staff, but then also involved in supporting candidates either that are existing council members or that are in races against those council members. So I don't know if that's exactly what you're getting at, but I know that, at least from my seat, I think it's can be very challenging when somebody's a resident, their staff, and they're also politically active within the community in which we're serving the city council, I think can create some very odd dynamics. But I don't know if that can be prohibited, so I would defer to, yeah, Attorney Thompson's saying that it can't be prohibited, but let him.
The employee can, on their own time, can do whatever they want to do with respect to, you know, supporting candidates. Personal time. I think that's really the short answer to that. Whether it's here or in some other city or statewide,
I think our staff is pretty conscious of their responsibility to keep their roles separate. But the fact of the matter is some of them are recognizable broadly in the community. And I guess I'm mostly concerned about people feeling undue fear or concern about their rights as a private person versus their obligations as a city employee. And so maybe as campaign season gets rolling, maybe you, Jay, or Dr. Smith could just, like, if you're ever confused about these roles, please come and seek guidance or something. Something kind of friendly and non-punitive like that for the staff who are engaged in both roles would be kind.
Yeah, no, Winston, Councilor Erickson, members of council, I appreciate that point. Yeah, because there does feel like there can be some gray area, and obviously for the benefit of the candidates, for the benefit of staff, want to try to help employees navigate that as best as possible.
Well, you have a little bit of popcorn.
I'm enjoying all of this conversation.
Yeah, where's our bowls of popcorn?
I don't. Come on in.
So I guess
put some in my hat.
Yeah. So if you're going to get into the three tiers of.
Yeah. Thanks, Mayor, councilmembers. The other topic, and I'll introduce it, and then turn over to Director Colberg and Manager Devinish to share anything that they might want to say. Also, Assistant City Manager Dr. Smith is on as well, virtually here. The issue of political tabling at events has also been historically been a topic that's come up. We do have a policy today that allows campaigning at our Tater Days parade, and so that's a pretty typical tradition that happens every 4 years, every 2 years, every 4 years, depending on the circumstance. And so that's pretty clear. Some of our larger events, though, on occasion, for example, Juneteenth, we've had people who have purchased tables to have a presence at the event, that was made available to everybody, but not everybody took advantage of it, and there was just some challenges with that 4 years ago in terms of just some challenges about that, because not everybody took advantage of it, but some people did, some people didn't, and so it became a little bit of a discussion and a little bit of tension directed towards staff. We have also had people show up at some of our community events who have been, I would say, sort of, you know, against candidates. They're not necessarily a candidate themselves, but their presence there is because they're trying to essentially bring negativity directed towards individual candidates. This happened at a Juneteenth event, and Northampton Community College at the time had a policy in terms of that type of incident or that type of actions was not allowable on the campus, and so their security was able to deal with the situation. But we are trying to get clarity in terms of the council's position on should we allow political tabling at our events. If so, all events, just some of our major events. Director Tolberg and I came up with at least a few of the events that Rec and Parks involved in thinking about. But as you know, the city's involved, whether as the lead agency or in partnership on a number of events throughout the year. Manager Devinish, Director Tolberg, you know, other events, it just lots. You know, once summer hits, we're multiple events every week, it feels like. So we're trying to get some clarity there. One of the pros I would highlight is for events that we do put on, it is nice to get some of that revenue, honestly, from some of the events. That is one of the benefits. If Dr. Davis were here, he would talk about that. that some of that additional revenue is beneficial to put on the events. And so I would highlight that as a way of the value of it. There's also value of, you know, we're at a place and a location where a lot of people are going to be attending. And so it's a great opportunity for candidates to have a presence and to get their positions out. Another one of the events that Director Trelberg and I talked about was also the farmer's market. You know, it's a weekly thing, and the value of kind of the volume of people there. So, and then on the flip side is if we allow kind of renting tables at those booths, it does open it up to anybody, both people for their own campaigns, but then also for anybody who might want to run, you know, an anti-Jay Strobel, you know, for mayor campaign. I'm not running for mayor, but just I'm just using myself as an example. So just awareness on that. And then it just does create, you know, what's you know, can be a very meant to be sort of family-friendly events that we put on, feel a little bit more like political campaigning events, which can be, I think, they can be sympathetic or simpatico, you know, work together, but it all depends on kind of, you know, not only the tabling, but are people walking around and handing out literature and so on. So we're not trying to quash political campaigning, we're just trying to get clarity on what we should or shouldn't allow. I'll turn over to Director Tolberg and Andrew Devinish if they have anything to share, and also Attorney Thompson. And we did find one example, by the way, from Minnetonka for your reference, specifically related to this. So just a heads up in terms of what one other city does.
Do I need the microphone, or do I just? I can. If I certainly people, can talk loud enough. I coach.
If you want people on line to hear.
Yes, you can hear. I guess in addition to all the stuff that Jay has mentioned, it's really just trying to provide parameters for our staff to be able to really easily inform folks and set those event guidelines going forward. Whether we do or we don't, or where we land in the middle, it's really what staff has asked for going back 4 years ago and 2 years ago is really what can we... What are we allowing, and kind of what is the language that we can use to tell people, no, you can't do this, or yes, you can do this, but in this area and such. So really just being able to get the clarity around that. I echo Jay's sentiment about the ability to generate some revenue when we look at these opportunities. But I also think just that consistency and the ability to... have that probably plays in a larger role in all of this. Anything you want to add, Cindy?
Well, you said everything.
Probably back to you.
Cousin Mary Anderson.
I guess my thought on that would be, so let's take the summer, for example, if I'm in pre-election and there's somebody else who's choosing to run for the same seat, I sort of have a built-in advantage of like going to a city event is sort of logical in my role as a council member, and I have a little name tag and whatever, and I can be there and not be campaigning at all, but have like presence and recognition. Whereas my opponent wouldn't have that advantage. Whereas if they're tabling, that it gives them presence and visibility. So I guess my suggestion would be to maybe if there's a filed committee, like if somebody's filed a committee with the finance board, mm-hmm. could that be a qualifier for having a political table? Mm-hmm. And that might prove, at least then if someone wants to be a spoiler, they have to be an organized spoiler. Mm-hmm.
Registered spoiler.
That's where we're page. Attorney Thompson.
Yes, let me comment on that. Okay. I'll give you a 2-minute primer on the law. Right? There are places that are called traditional public forums. The city park is the primary example of that. And people can platform, set in the middle of the city park and see whatever they want as long as it's not obscene or that. That's called a traditional public forum, which you cannot regulate. The other type are called limited public forums, where you open up a public forum, the open mic, the open, beginning of every council meeting, all those things. We can regulate it because it's a limited public forum. The situation we're talking about here are limited public forums, okay? And you can choose to open it up to, let's say, candidates, free speech, but once you do that, the rules have to be the same for everybody. What the law is on the First Amendment, obviously, you can't regulate content, you can't regulate viewpoint, but you can regulate reasonable time, place, and manner of speech if you have a significant interest in doing that. But those are the magic buzzwords. The quick case that I already talked to Brad about, a little bit with Jay, was a case arising out of the state fair in Minnesota that went all the way up to the Supreme Court. The state fair had a rule that they opened their rules for the First Amendment type activity. It was risk on a certain basis. You had to pay a fee. And a religious organization who didn't have food went around the fair handing out flyers. And the fair said they can't do that. They got challenged. They went up to the U.S. Supreme Court. The U.S. Supreme Court said that a reasonable time, place, and manner regulation in that context, because the state fair is so crowded and it, you know, it's body to body, that it's reasonable not to let, you know, these type of activities go on that way and require them to be at the booth. So that got upheld. Now, I've talked to Brad about that. In these situations, I know there's been some concern about that happening here. When a candidate's at a booth, another candidate doesn't walk around. We'd have to work with that a little bit, because the rationale for this U.S. Supreme Court decision was the compactness and that probably might not exist in this situation. And the fact that somebody attending the event might be put off because people are approaching them as opposed to being at a booth is not by itself a significant governmental interest, in my opinion. So we have to do a little bit of analyzing that. So that's one situation that we have to be a little careful about. And similarly, in the U.S., in this situation, saying you have to be a registered candidate, I'd be a little concerned about that. I mean, we're stopping to regulate who can participate, not how, not where, or when, or how. So I don't want to look into that. That might be a little bit of a challenge.
Councilmember Page.
Thank you, Mayor. So I just want to throw some thoughts out there. I don't think town halls should have tabling. I don't think those informational meetings or the special meetings that we do, I don't think that's the place for that. But I think in a lot of cities, and back in the day when Tater Days was, the whole weekend, it was different. It was, those were the things where everyone came out. And it was, I don't know if they charged from way back then, and this is like 20 years ago. So I feel like I'm open to some of the events in the city, but I would prefer to limit it, just because I just always look at resources of staff, time, and then the event. Yeah, I mean, I think we should just be free of that sometimes. I really do. On the first issue in regards to, I had conversations with the city manager about this, there is a really large presence of employees involved in a political process in Brooklyn Park. And I'm not saying good or bad here, I'm just saying that it's noticeably important people, respected people. The lines feel a little crossed with that, but not that anything's wrong. I'm still trying to figure it out. I am newer to this. But I think we do have to be cautious of providing transparency and just leveling the playing field for everyone, just to recognize there's a job at the city, there's community engagement, there's political engagement, and just to be mindful of that. I don't know how to do it, and I'm not pointing anything out. I'm just saying there is, it's a little confusing sometimes for me as a resident to see what that line is. So I'm just saying that because I see it, I don't know how to address it, and I don't, there's no fix. I just want to put that out there. But I did see specifically at the healing event at Champlain Park, I was pretty disappointed to have some of those, I don't want to say troublemakers, disruptors. There was a person that during my own personal campaign was very tough on me. And here we are, but that person would, at many events, start with me and my family and whoever was around me, and then came to the healing event to get a whole bunch of photographs, as they said, for their, you know, the next campaign. And so I felt, as a resident, I felt sad by that. I know we can't control that, but I think if the city can be mindful of limiting, I just think it's good for all of us, just to keep a level of separation, however that works. And again, I don't have the answers. I'm just saying out loud what's coming to my heart and my head. So thank you for that.
Councilmember Panowski.
Thank you, Mayor. Question, I don't know if it's Brad or Jay, but can you guys talk a little bit more about the financial benefits, what kind of money, who's buying the deal, the name, like what kind of entities are purchasing these table spaces? That would be helpful.
Yeah, Councilor McCloskey with the council. It's not a huge dollar number, you know, depending on the political year, like this year, there'll be far more booths than there were 2 years ago. But, you know, it's a couple thousand dollars, right? Where I think, I want to say, don't quote me on this, but $150 a booth is for the community gathering event. We haven't had booths at other events like Spooktacular, Summer Splash, Juneteenth. I know Dr. Davis and community engagement have had. And I don't know what they charge specifically there, but so it's not a large number, but all of that matters when we're talking about limited budgets.
Yeah, that's helpful. I tend to agree with Councilmember Page. There are some things that feels really inappropriate to have that, like the healing event and the warm booths.
Right.
And then there's events that we have that it makes more sense. I think when you were talking about information or healing or things of that nature, like a town hall, having the booths would be really bizarre. But then things like the real estate forum that's coming up. I mean, I don't know why you want to have a booth there, but there, it just seems like there would be the right places and the wrong places, but it's hard to determine what that is off the top of my head. Honestly, I like Juneteenth would make some sense. There's people there that are probably engaged and they want to have a direct one-on-one with the candidate and talk to them. It's hard, but as I was talking to Jay about some of this earlier, we have to consider all the various types of people that show up to campaign. Some people want to campaign really negatively. Some people want to have collaboration, conversation. So what do we want the city to experience, because at the end of the day, all of our job is to ensure that our residents' needs are being met. So if they're coming up to, you know, Spooktacular, are they there to engage with the community broadly? Is it there to be campaigned at? There's a lot of waiting to do there. I think there's more conversation, honestly, needed for some of this. Maybe a breakdown of events we've typically had this kind of participation and ones that we don't.
They'll be hopeful to be able to analyze. Maybe you can build it off the top of your head.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Councilor Kowalski. A quick question, clarification for Attorney Thompson. One of the things that I know Brad and I were talking about was so this issue of running tables versus this issue of just people walking around. So let's say we did rent tables at Juneteenth. And somebody chose not to rent a table, but they chose to walk around with their literature. You know, can a policy be created to distinguish between those two things, or not necessarily?
Well, yes, a policy could be, and that's sort of what the state fair did. I mean, but and they, even to regulate time, place, and manner, law says that you need a significant governmental interest in doing that. That's the magic buzzwords. And for the state fair case, they said there was a significant governmental interest because the fair is so crowded, and they relied on that factor to say there was a significant governmental interest. So what we would have to determine is in the city, a city event, whether there's a significant governmental interest in distinguishing between sitting at a table and walking around. And that could be a challenge because simply because one candidate complains that they chose to buy a booth and sit there and is complaining about somebody else who didn't buy a booth, that's not a significant governmental interest. There has to be something else involved, limited space or some other reason. We'd have to say, okay, why are we doing this? Why are we distinguishing? And I don't think the why is, we don't think it's fair, that's not going to be good. If the why is, we don't want our residents to be approached by candidates, I don't think that's going to meet the level. We'd have to come up with some other reason, justifiable reason, as to why we're distinguishing between the two.
Just one quick follow-up. So it sounds like we could identify, let's say, Manager Devinish and Director Talbert come back and say, okay, here are five of our largest events that might best suit the political activity from being there. We could identify political activity can happen at these five events, but are prohibited from the other city events.
Prohibited, yes. So in fact, what I was going to suggest, you know, I heard this comment, it might be helpful for staff to get guidance from the council on what events does the council think these types of activities should take place because of the nature of the event or something like that. And then you can get some direction on that, and then we can see what kind of guidelines we come up with.
So, one second. So I would say that, you know, when you brought up the spectacular and other events, I think one of the ways that we can consider is if political activity is involved, how is it going to impact the experience for the overall experience that we're trying to have, right? So you could theoretically have political activity that's spectacular. I don't know that my daughter would appreciate that very much. I don't know if the parents would appreciate that very much. It tends to impact the quality of that experience, right? I think if you're looking at Juneteenth, when it's not pouring rain, you tend to have people to move around, and you know, maybe it makes sense to have political activity there for that. But I think working backwards from what that experience, who the experience is for, and what that experience looks like, can maybe filter out a number of things that people would consider. And then we can go from there in terms of creating that particular policy. Because I think there's just a number of events I think of and I say, well, that would mess up the experience for the residents. So not necessary to necessarily have it there, even if we can make income. So.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Council. For our attorney, I have a clarifying question, sir. So, Councilmember Page, I heard you when you said that there was some disruptors.
Uh-huh.
And even if we were to come up with a policy and we decided our five events be Tater Days, Juneteenth, COSA, or whatever, if you initiate that policy, how do you stop disruptors or an individual passing out or saying negative comments? So given, again, to your point, Councilmember Page, the capacity of certain staff or security, there are certain things that we can try to act on, and there are certain things that we cannot because of our limited capacity. So if you don't mind me asking, sir, what is something that we could do if you did decide on this policy?
Yes, I mean, think real question is good. Whatever policy you decide, how are you going to enforce it? Right? That's what you're really saying.
Yes, sir. Long-winded.
They use the state fair as an example. If someone, they have police, and then someone's violating their rules, and they now know the rule is constitutional, that's probably how they would probably make a, like, not police department does, they'd probably make a first, simple request to stop, and try to handle it in a user-friendly manner. If that didn't happen, eventually they probably would cite them, and so there is, and I'm not suggesting that here, I'm saying that there's always an enforcement question, even if it's legal. How enforceable is it in a practical sense? But I think that's what you're getting at, and that's why the rationale for the rule, we need to know what the rationale for the rule is, and if it's not overcrowding, we need to figure out the rationale, and then we can hopefully we can prohibit it. We have to come up with an enforcement mechanism. Again, sometimes you impact the quality of the event, others that are in attendance. So it's a challenge.
Thank you, sir.
Councilmember Page.
Can I just get a clarification from you? So are you thinking by my comments that I was saying I was expecting the city to enforce that?
Oh.
I just want to make sure.
Councilmember Page, Mayor of the Council, thank you. Usually when a policy is drafted, there is a sense of accountability. And if I did not follow the policy, or another council member, mayor, whoever may be, did not follow the policy, then in turn there might be some, not necessarily retribution, that's a heavy word, but accountability. So policies are drafted to enforce accountability. And it was nothing that you directly said, I just was trying to think about our staff.
No, let me just clarify, because when you're talking about the disruptor specifically,
yes.
The other stuff I totally get, I understand policy, because I'm with you, I don't think there's anything we can do to enforce that.
Yes.
So I'm with you. I just want to make sure you were clear on that, but I just don't think a policy or a procedure, or I just don't think staff would be responsible
yes,
for
ma'am.
That at all. So I just want to make sure
yes,
you're aware
of that. Yes, ma'am.
Okay,
yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to comment too about there are a lot of staff here politically engaged, mm-hmm. and I think that's a really good thing. No matter what side of the aisle or whatever it is, we have engaged residents. We're fortunate to have residents that care, who's representing them on multiple levels, and then residents working in our city. And I think it should feel very open for them in terms of communication with city manager and other staff that they're supported. They have a right to do that. We encourage people to become civically engaged. And we have these two ladies who are always here. We have people that want to get more people civically engaged. So I think it would be a disservice to our residents and our community if in any way we tried to inhibit the political activity of our residents that also work at the city.
Members of the council, so I'm getting a sense that maybe as a next step related to the tabling, that we could come back with some limited number of events that we would allow political activity, whether that's people handing out materials or whether it's tabling, being the opportunity for renting tabling if the event sort of was conducive to that. So we can do that if that is a natural next step, but I didn't want to squash any additional discussion if there's more questions or thoughts.
Yep, that makes sense to me. Councilmember Jordan.
Thank you, Michael. I you know, I'm here believe that whatever we've been doing, we still have to follow the federal and the state law for candidate and election. For example, primary state law have primary sport, a rule for local official. How do you not to use public resort for campaign, you know, new official position in campaign, local, municipal, county policy. We have to keep in mind those rules for whatever we do in the future or in later after this.
Yeah, I do think that we are staying within federal and state guidelines or law with this, and I don't know if it's a discussion so much about us using city resources to campaign, because I don't think there's any intention up here, and I haven't heard about that being a historical problem as well. I know that there is a thing called incumbent advantage, but there's nothing we can really do about that because we ran for office and or incumbents, but I do think that staff is always wary about the appearance of backing any particular candidates, and I know that generally we as a council are wary of using any unfair advantage as well. Councilmember Strobel, I agree with your approach on next steps for the tabling. I guess that could lead us into just events. I have a State of the City event coming up in April, so I don't think that's an issue, but I do think that maybe there's sometimes concerns about something closer, but I would also say that there's a balance, because I do think that residents have the right to know if Central District has been consistently reporting out to residents and letting them know what's going, you know, they want to have a town hall about that. And they've been doing that in non-election years. For me, it seems like just a part of the work that they're doing, right? I know that there's room for interpretation to that, but I do think that residents have a right to know what's going on, and they have a right to interact with council, aside from city council meetings or just emails. So I think this council has been perhaps more intentional in terms of just interacting with residents through those town halls as well. So I don't particularly see an issue with something like that, but I would guess I'd want to hear from other council members. But I think it's important that residents feel like they are able to reach out to their city councilors and hold them accountable on a regular basis.
Mayor Winston, members of council. So jumping into that third category, moving on from the tabling to talking about sort of the timing of city-sponsored events, sort of making a little bit of a distinction here between a town hall type setting that specifically the content and the focus is the mayor and the elected officials that represent that particular district, similar, you know, at least that's how we did them this last year. Distinguishing that from like Juneteenth, which is very, very different. You know, obviously at a town hall type event, you know, the spotlight is very much on the mayor and the elected representatives, the council members from that district. So 4 years ago, we got into a very similar conversation relative to tonight, specifically around sort of the timing of some events, where those events were putting the elected officials on the spotlight. Whether it was a town hall event or something similar back then, there wasn't always the partnership among district represented colleagues. And so for last year, there was some town hall meetings where there was partnership among the mayor and council members where people wanted to jointly do that together. That wasn't necessarily always the case. Historically, so they there's also a part of the conversation was just not wanting to have the appearance of using, to Councilmember Tran's point earlier, where a public entity may not expend public funds, including staff time, on anything that urges or promotes the candidacy of any individual running for public office. And while the intent of the incumbents hosting a town hall may be, you know, not to have a town hall that's promoting them, it could be perceived by their political opponent or by other members of the community that is indeed the case. And so that's where the challenge comes, right, in terms of the intent versus impact or how it's perceived. So at least based on the conversation among the council, the previous council, and none of those members exist today, there was the policy that they put in place around the mayor and councilmember constituent relations policy that essentially, urged those types of events, including like town hall events, to happen before July or June 1st, for the benefit of not having the appearance that there was any, support of any particular candidates once a political campaign season really hit. You know, with the primaries on August 11th, when people, you know, filing that window, typically, Devin, what is it this year, middle of May to end of May? What's that?
Mayor, what's the name, council members? May 19th is the official filing date.
Okay, that's the beginning?
Beginning, May 19th through June 2nd.
June 2nd. That really does sort of kick off sort of the political campaign season, and for some respects, it's already begun in some moments in reality. But from an official standpoint, the deadlines or timelines that we have from the state, kind of that's the window that at least was on staff's mind when we were working with previous council around this conversation. So I would encourage, the council can obviously change the policy. You know, that's the choice of the council. From my experience and sort of what I've witnessed over the last 10 years here in Brooklyn Park, I think that there would be benefit to, I think there's good reason why the policy was put in place, and my recommendation would be that we continue that so that on election years, if we were to do town hall meetings, that we would try to get those done by June 1st. But obviously, that's a policy that's ultimately council's decision, not city staff's decision, and open it up to whatever questions or thoughts that the council might have.
I tend to be neutral on this one. Residents deserve to be communicated to. I understand that, sometimes people want to challenge, they feel like it's a disadvantage, but the incumbent advantage is real. I feel like anybody should blunt it at the expense of residents getting the information they want, but I'm neutral on this one. I'm not tied down in any particular direction. I guess I'd want to hear what other, whatever counselors think. So. Councilmember Lanowski.
Thank you. I feel very similar in that way. And at the end of the day, in the conversation that Jay and I had was really what's in the best interest of the community. And we're fortunate that we currently have a council that gets along, does great. We hosted our town hall together with Central District. But in whatever we are setting policy or changing policy, really has to be with the consideration of a lot of different types of people who want to serve or want to campaign. We chatted today, there's probably not a good time in the fall to hold a town hall. Early summer, by June, makes sense. I think at the end of the day, again, it's being consistent, having it consistent. If it's every year, if it's every other year, that we have something that residents and the community knows. This is the month that town halls happen. It gives a newly elected person a few months to get in and settle in a little bit before you go plop them down in front of a room full of people asking lots of questions. So I tend to lean towards closer to June, because it is drinking from a fire hose your first few months on council. It is hard to answer questions that residents have. Still is after 3 years, but I want to make sure that we're mindful, kind of as Mayor Winston was saying, that we're ensuring that whatever we're doing is in the best interest of the community, not necessarily just on the people campaigning. And I do think we have a duty to be accountable. I don't see them as campaign events. I personally wouldn't be going to a campaign. I don't think they're a spotlight on the council. I think it's a time for accountability, where our residents who aren't attending these meetings regularly have a chance to talk to us and ask us questions and tell us if they like what we're doing or not and make demands of us, which I think is our job. And we should be doing that, frankly, more often. But now, I don't disagree with Jay's interpretation either about how it could be perceived. And again, the conversation we had was the best interest of the residents is probably before school gets out, so that people are in town, maybe a little bit more inclined to be able to attend the town hall, not having summer vacations or spring breaks. So I'm in favor of, if we're going to look at a May timeline, but again, consistency. If we choose to have them every year, they're every year May, unless an event happens that makes it challenging.
So you don't want that last week of October?
I mean,
that'd
be great.
Councilman
Reyes. I'm going to flip this other thing. Just came to me. If no one else thinks it's great or if everyone thinks it's terrible, it's fine.
I love these moments.
To avoid the sense of the campaign in a town hall, maybe we could do an event with Cindy's team and invite anybody that's running for an office that impacts Brooklyn Park to come get a table, and residents can walk around and meet everybody from city council on to the Senate seat. Anyone who wants to have a table, it's open to everyone. And it builds community engagement around voting.
Councilmember Page.
So I have a comment and a clarification. So do you mean at town hall?
A separate event.
Oh. I'm not for or against that. I know it's another thing for the team, and if it's too much work for them, I'm going to say maybe table that one. But I do want to talk about Councilmember Klonowski's comments, and I think those are supportive in our exchange. I think we've done 3 rounds since the last town hall of talking about what we want, and I think it's all consistent that we want it on the same time. And I think you can do it whatever works best for the city staff for dates, like times of counting down. So we knew we wanted it last year. I think we should just get to that point, and I feel like whatever is best for you guys for the date, it's really close. Like, really close, I think, for the dates that we were talking about. So I think we can mutually agree what works for the city and for the town hall. What was the date we had last time? Do you guys remember? I don't have my phone.
It was July, wasn't it?
Was it? So move it up to...
Can I just do a clarification? So... So last year, because I went back and I looked actually at emails, the original dates for East and West were in May, and Central was July. What ended up happening is because of scheduling issues of council members, and then for the Hortman tragedy, all three ended up getting pushed back to July. You know, staff's preference, especially because community engagement, this is a big burden on them. There's a ton of other events that happen during the summertime. So from a staffing standpoint, and I think from an optics standpoint, I think May would be preferred for both of those. If we want to be conscious of the staffing piece and the optics piece, I think May would be preferred. And I don't know. I actually really like the idea from Councilmember Erickson there of just invite everybody, have an opportunity of get out the vote, bring anybody can and can come. It's like a forum for people to do one-stop shopping for candidates. You know, I don't know if that makes our attorney anxious, but, or our city clerk anxious, but
just seems like it's a different type of, it's not in lieu of because in May.
No, not in lieu of. Town hall.
Oh, then yeah, they're doing something to the League of Voters, which are, you know, there are other organizations here. I don't think there's anything that prohibits the city from putting that on a question. Is this something that's needed or is probably being served by some other organization? No, I don't have a problem from a legal perspective with that type of form at all.
Mayor Winston and council members, I'm speaking with Cindy. We're having a community engagement education series where we're going to invite anyone who wants to be, who wants to run for a local office, mayor or councilman, come in. I'll have Pete staff from Environmental Health to talk about where you can and cannot put your campaign signs. I'll be there to talk about petitions, affidavit of candidacy, campaign finance reports, and things like that. I'll also have a couple of past candidates to talk to the people who wanted to run their experiences with running for council. So that's in the works right now.
Councilmember Page.
April 16th.
Thank you, Mayor. We just have a lot to do with Cindy's team with the events. So I would recommend that we don't add to it. We do also have Acer, Kathy, Women's League of Voters. There's multiple groups that have these forums for the candidates. And I feel it does a really good service for the community. I just think adding another thing to your plate just feels this would be a great opportunity over here that Devin was talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I'm comfortable, just to kind of bring it back, I'm comfortable to kind of close the loop on this with the town halls in May, if that's possible. If this is, you know, if it's not overbooking you all, May makes sense. I think it's something we can continue mid-May, late-May, whatever. We can continue the years to come, kind of establish it. It's just something that the council does on a regular basis. And then I think, not even secondary, tertiary to that. I like the idea, but I just think from a bandwidth perspective, the other thing maybe that could fit more so with what City Clerk Montero was talking about. But the town hall, I think, needs to just go ahead in May. Right. Was there a second tier that was here? So we hit all three tiers? All right.
It was the photographs. It was the tabling piece. And then it was the timing piece.
So it sounds like we solved all the First Amendment problems in front of the city.
Great.
All right. Well, I think that's it then. Thanks, everyone, for all of the time and the patience and again, to staff, I know that you put a lot of work into these things, and then you have to get into the legal ramifications and all that. So thank you for patiently working with us on this and meeting adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So all I heard is I can Photoshop any